This audio tape is copyrighted by Uplift Ministries to maintain the integrity of the material. Permission is granted to make copies of this tape in its entirety as long as this message is included. Additional resources may be obtained from Uplift Ministries by calling 1-800-952-2382.
I'm going to start then by doing five things this afternoon. First of all, tell you just a little bit about ourselves, give you a little bit of our background, then discuss who actually is in jail. I think you'll find that interesting. Then talk about being involved in prison ministry or starting a prison ministry. Share some really practical information and some practical resources that you really need to have at your fingertips. And then lastly, hopefully there'll be some time for questions. But before we do that, then let's just open in a word of prayer. Father, we thank thee for your many blessings to us. Each one in this room has so much. Most of all, we have yourself and your son to be able to share with others. And so we thank thee for this group of people who are involved in prison ministry, involved or interested in sharing the good news of the Lord Jesus Christ with those who perhaps may not have heard it. We ask now your blessing over us this afternoon. Be with us. Help us to learn. We thank you for this opportunity. We pray these things in Jesus' precious name. Well, you may already know, but my name is Garrett, and my wife, Susan. That's Suzanne, but your real name is Susan, right, Susan?
No, my real name is Suzanne. He calls me Susan.
So, your legal name is Suzanne, right?
Yep.
I'm a Canadian, and Susan's an American, and so that makes us very appropriate to do this particular seminar together. We're going to try to keep it generic. I mean, we're representing Canadian prison ministries and American prison ministries, but we are from both countries, so it will be a binational presentation. Feel free to interrupt with any questions or comments at any time. I've asked Susan actually to also add additional comments and make sure that you get your money's worth this particular presentation. We live in London, Ontario, approximately 2 hours east of here. We have two adult children. Our daughter is age 27 and our son is 24. I was a teacher by career. I've taught for about 20 years. Got involved in prison ministry just on a monthly basis, just like many of you are involved in something already, as an outreach of your assembly or as in a personal outreach. We started in 1980 in our local jail by simply going in and asking the chaplain, would he be interested in us showing a Christian film there once a month? That's how easy it was. It was easier in those days. Rules have changed somewhat, but we had been showing Christian films in our local assembly, and we thought, well, maybe we can outreach into the community. And the jail was just very close, and we just went to the chaplain and said, could we do that? Could we show a Christian film once? He said, that'd be great. He was part-time, and so he felt that would really supplement some of the things that he was doing. So that's how we got started. Then it progressed from there. The men asked us, could we come in during the week and do one-on-one visitation? And then we had to go through a different clearance procedure, a little bit of different training. And then we got cleared for the one-on-one and went in then during the week. We're going to talk a little bit more in detail about one-on-one. Then our local jail is a detention center, or in jail terminology, simply a bucket. You may have heard that, a bucket. Meaning they simply get dropped in there after they've been picked up by the police. They have not been sentenced yet. So it's really a holding tank. That's why they call it a bucket, or a detention center.
Or a jail.
Or a jail here, that's right. Your jails would be the detention centers. Now, they're all maximum security, because you could have a guy there that hasn't paid a fine, or that's up for murder. He still goes through the jail or through the detention center while he's waiting his court appearance. And then from that institution, then they're back and forth to court, how many times, right? A little arrangement, first of all, and then somebody's not there, so they're back to jail again, and they could go back and forth 3 or 4 times. Finally, once they're sentenced, then they're sentenced to another institution. And I'm saying all of this to tell you simply that at the local detention centers or jails, there are very few programs going on because of all this disruption back and forth. And because of that, we started then, or realizing they had a lot of free time in their hands, that's when we started with the Emmaus Bible Correspondence Course. That's when Susan got involved, because I said I was still teaching at the time. And chaplains would then call and ask what course the student so-and-so need, or could we send some more courses? And so the chaplain would then end up talking to Susan. She actually developed then the correspondence curriculum that we have and started working with volunteers, because my mom started getting involved, right, and another lady, and it just kept on growing. And we started in our home. It's very easy to start just in your own home. As long as you have a room. Yeah, come on, we're just starting. Just starting. Come on in. We're just talking a little bit about ourselves and how we ourselves got involved in prison ministry.
I should just add that the big work started when we found out about the Emmaus program that was available, because we had started just as volunteers doing a little thing, and through a wonderful story, which we don't have time for, we came into contact with John Bell in Pennsylvania, who had been contacted by Phil Wagner in California. And that's a wonderful story about how Phil pioneered the work. It's just tremendous. And so we are actually grandchildren of Phil up in Canada. And we just really found the courses to be wonderful, although the U.S. penal coordinators are mainly doing just the correspondence work. We had started with film work and added the correspondence work, and we had to adapt it to Canadian chaplaincy. In the U.S., you have freedom of religion. We do not. In the institutions, they do not have freedom of religion in that it has to go through a chaplain. Everything is censored through a chaplain. If you have a Catholic chaplain and you have materials that are not pro-Catholic, they don't get them in. If you have a Muslim chaplain or a Jewish chaplain, we have all interfaith chaplaincy. So you have to have your material approved. And we just started with EMAS courses, didn't take time to read them all.
Because we trusted them.
And the work just flourished. It just went out incredibly. And so we're using these courses, and there are some that specifically mention negative things about certain groups. And so we had difficulty, and we had a wonderful work going on at Saskatchewan Penitentiary with a Pentecostal chaplain, and came across some anti-charismatic comments, and so that just wiped out the whole thing. We had another institution in Ontario, a very large institution, Workworth, and they hit Galatians, and they mentioned their anti-Seventh-day Adventists or Jehovah Witnesses. And now that we're not pro-Jehovah Witness, but we cannot slam another group. And so we had to do a lot of adaptation. We had to pull 15 courses. And then we noticed that the Emmaus courses were primarily New Testament, which is what's really most important for the guys. But we were able to add 7 Old Testament courses from Everyday Publications, Dr. Harlow's group. Wonderful, because it's written in a grade 6 level Everyday English. It was just super. So we added that, and then we added a number of Navigator courses. And that brings our curriculum up to 80. Every penal coordinator in the U.S. has their own options. If a lot of them do a lot of Spanish work, and they may have less courses. But some use Navigator, some use all EMAS. So, you know, if you contact different people, you'll find there's a variation, and that's okay.
Yeah, there's that freedom to work and to build your own curriculum or whatever. And yet there's also that loose framework or that network. For example, once a year, all the EMAS coordinators from the various different states in Canada get together for an EMAS-sponsored penal coordinators conference. And so there are 40 or 50 or 60 of us at that time, and just have good sessions together, training sessions and fellowship sessions. So there is that networking together, yeah. That gives you a little bit of our background then. And from those simple beginnings in 1980, New Life Prison Ministry, our prison ministry then, now involves approximately 100 volunteers. We're all volunteers, and we work now all across Canada. Started in 1980 in one city with 2 guys, and the Lord has just caused it to grow, where we then work in approximately 65 institutions across Canada with now videos instead of films, and with the Bible correspondence courses, some one-on-one visitation as personnel allows, some chapel services, a little bit of follow-up work. So that's what we're involved in at this particular time. Sometimes somebody will ask, especially in an assembly, if we're giving a presentation, well, are inmates getting saved? And I can only tell you, yes, inmates are getting saved. There's no question about that. It's a missionary work within our own borders. Because with the Bible and prayer being out of the schools at this point, many inmates have never yet heard a clear presentation. They may have heard the gospel, but they never really heard a clear presentation of the gospel. So it's a ripe field. In fact, what's really neat is that most times, if you have a chapel service or a video showing, they're not compelled to come. It's not compulsory. So they come on their own. Now, sometimes they come just to get out of their cells. Or sometimes they come to visit with somebody or to pass a note or whatever. But they come for different reasons. But like I said, they're not compelled to come. And many times they're ripe to listen to the message of the gospel. So it is a great mission field right within our own borders. Some people say, well, should we just lock them up and throw away the key? And the answer to that, I think, probably is yes. Some people, we do need to do that. And Susan will talk about that in a little while when we talk about who is in jail. But on the other hand, if we have an opportunity to present them with the gospel during that time that they are locked up, then let's do that. Same time, 95-98% of the inmates are going to come back into society. There will be some that stay there. They have life sentences, true life sentences. But most come back into society. So then we need to certainly present them with the gospel. And if they are saved, it's tremendous good salvation for them, but it's also good as far as society is concerned.
Less crime. Is it all worth it?
Well, I wouldn't have given up a good teaching position with pension plans and all the benefits and probably a $60,000 or $65,000 salary at this point had it not been worth it. We have seen enough lives change, enough men turn their lives around, enough guys having become Christians to get involved in this. I was teaching full-time. This became full-time. And we finally said, boy, this getting too much. I was involved as a deacon in my chapel, and Susan was involved in Christian Women's Club and many other things. We finally had very little time for family, very little time for each other. And we just said, something's got to give. Either we have to give up the prison ministry, or we have to give up teaching. And we made it a family prayer project for about half a year, because we knew there were no finances involved. I mean, just enough money was coming in for postage and courses and videos, and that's the same what was coming out. But we counseled with our elders and with a lot of other field workers and with our kids, prayed with our kids. And after half a year, the Lord made it very clear that we should be involved in a full-time basis. And so that was 1987 that we stepped out in faith, were commended by our chapel. And the reason I'm telling you this is I can only encourage you in this. Many encouraged us to do it. And I said, yeah, it's easy for you to say, you know, to give up a good salary and all that. But the Lord has blessed us, has met all of our needs. And I can only say that we have never regretted making that decision. So that's just a tremendous way to say thank you to the Lord by just being a testimony to his faithfulness. Certainly is worth it. Now, have we ever been conned? Certainly. We've gotten conned. And probably will again, even though we've got a little bit more experience now. Have we ever gotten burned? Well, we've gotten burned too. The last chap that we had living with us for 5 months was a murderer. He was up for murder. Lived with us on parole. I think he was parole to our place, wasn't he? Yeah. And in the middle of the night, one night, he took off and cleaned us out of all of our money, I think $400 or $500 or whatever, and we haven't seen him since. So you will get burned. That's just the nature of this particular business. That's why there are only 10 or 12 or 15 of you here. I mean, the other seminars probably have 100 or 200. But it's kind of a hands-off type of thing. We're just learning. But this is nitty-gritty stuff. And you will get conned. You will get burned. But that doesn't mean that we wouldn't ever have anyone over at our place again. That's simply part of the ministry.
We're not suggesting that you do that.
That's not a requirement.
In fact, we'd probably recommend you don't in most cases.
No, and having said all those things, if we scared you, if you want to find a different seminar, something else up your alley. Eh?
Okay, so that's enough about us. And we certainly will be happy to speak to any of you individually. We have a display board, both ours, and we've asked the other prison ministries, as I mentioned earlier, so Set Free from California sent theirs down. I've actually reversed it at this time. You'll have to look at the back of there to see what Set Free is all involved in, because we reversed it simply because their Russian prison ministry is now on the other side. And since we were talking about last night, we thought, well, let's just switch the board and present both areas. So that's out in the other area there. Okay, on to our subject then. We've already said then that prison ministry is a missionary field, and no question about that, since many hadn't heard the gospel yet. But on the other hand, we were surprised at how many Christians are in jail. That was one of the biggest surprises for us, mm-hmm. Susan? But we've got many letters on file from some of these fellows who are Christians, or ladies, telling us that they were glad that they were caught, that they were arrested, because this has now given them a time of quietness and reflection to think back and figure out just where their lives were going, and they'd be able to get back to the Lord and back on track. And so they thank the Lord for these prison experiences. But it just really surprised us at that time. Okay, now who is in jail?
Just that last comment made me think of this one letter we just got a few weeks ago where a fellow was saying he was a Christian. He at least confessed to be a Christian. He said he was in such a downhill spiral that he was so thankful the Lord stopped him when the police arrested him.
Yeah.
He didn't know what he would have done if he would have kept going in that direction. So it was kind of an interesting perspective to see how thankful he was for being arrested. Not normal, but you know, when a person recognizes that was the hand of God for him, that was really interesting. As Garrett says, that was one of the surprises. When we went in, prison ministry was not a real common thing back in 1980. It was just starting up even in the U.S. with Chuck Colson. And most of us going in were really green. There wasn't a lot of volunteer training. There wasn't a lot of material available. And so we learned a lot the hard way, which you don't have to do. This material is here today, and you're coming to learn.
Not that we're experts.
No,
but share some of the things we learned.
There's no sense in starting where we did.
Yeah.
You may as well learn by our mistakes. But we thought You know, everybody in prison comes from a broken home that, you know, is in poverty and just had all these stereotypes. And so when we met some Christians from good families inside, that was a real shock. And, and the comment would come, my parents were good parents, I come from a good home, but I made wrong choices. And so anybody can make wrong choices. And we learned a lot. We found that some of the people that you can talk to the most that are most normal are the murderers. Because they're not necessarily criminally minded. It might have been a love affair gone wrong. It can be situational. And so normally they think normal. And I'm not talking about the Jeffrey Dahmers. You know, that's the 10%, and he would be the extreme 1% on the one side who are not normal, and they certainly need to be behind bars. 85% of inmates are there for drug and alcohol-related crime. That is a big problem. And so they can be there for fraud. They can be there for
breaking in
and murder all the way up. And you find all different people. And one of the things that's very unsettling is we have found a number of innocent people inside. You can have inmates tell you they're innocent. Sometimes they do that because they don't think you're going to visit them or you're not going to have anything to do with them if they actually confess to the crime. So you do have people telling you they're innocent, but then there are those that actually are innocent. And I think some of you might have heard of Steve Linscott when he was an Emmaus student, how he was convicted of rape and murder, which he did not do, and eventually, after 12 years, was acquitted, which is really scary. We've had several of those in the Canadian prisons, too. Garrett visited one, and he was convicted of raping and murdering his next-door neighbor, a little 9-year-old girl, and he was finally cleared after a number of years with DNA. And one time, Garrett visited him in prison, and he came home and he said, if he's not innocent, then he sure thinks he is, and he certainly sounds innocent. I would hate to be on the jury. And that's what we've found sometimes, is it's really unsettling to find out that our system isn't foolproof. I thought before we got involved in prison ministry that, if my son happened to commit a crime and he went to prison, he would have to do his time and learn his lesson. Now I know that you don't necessarily go to prison if you're guilty. And if you have a good lawyer, you can get off. And sometimes lawyers really do their people a disservice because you'll have a young fellow that does something criminal, and he may get off, and all that does is allow him to think he can get away with it the next time, and it's a bigger crime. So it's really a very complicated system. It's not foolproof, and it's quite scary that way. We've met people that were in situations where they committed a crime, and one of the gentlemen yesterday mentioned that an example of that is drunk driving. You can have a person that has gotten drunk once and maybe doesn't even realize they're impaired, and they drive and they kill someone, and it affects their life, their family's life, and of course the victim's family for life. And it can be a one-time thing. And this is it's really pathetic to see these people that are doing time in real criminal institutions where they're not criminally minded, so they're not really prepared for the kind of harsh life that's inside. I'm thinking of one particular woman that shook a baby and the baby died. This person was not criminally minded, and yet she's doing time. So it's an interesting situation. So you have your innocent people. You have people that committed a crime at one time, and I'm not saying they shouldn't go to jail and do their time. I'm just saying that it's a very harsh environment for those type of people. Then you have your criminally minded, and what do I mean by criminally minded? Can you think of a couple of things that might be? Yeah, a lot of repeat. They don't seem to learn, and they're in and out. Any other ideas?
I don't think they can get away with it
for them. Oh, excellent.
If they went at home, then it's city jail, the county jail, state jail. Federal penitentiary, Alcatraz, got back out, dropped the bank and booked them.
They don't learn.
Asked the judge to give him leniency. He won't spend more time with the bank.
Yeah, that's a good criminal mind. It's always someone else's fault. They are the victim. One of the things that a guard told us in a 16 to 18-year-old offender facility was that what scares him is that they have no conscience. What's theirs is theirs, and what's yours is theirs. Just no conscience, and it's really scary to see that kind of thing coming up. So you have criminally minded. Go ahead.
Okay, now, you're here because you want to know how you can be involved.
So let's talk a little bit about that. I was going to say that the easiest way to be involved in prison ministry, and some of you may be already doing that, but that's to pray for the works, pray for the different prison ministries that are going on. But a little while ago, I was talking to someone also involved. In fact, it was John Bell, as some of you know, and we were discussing the need for funds, and someone said to John, well, John, just pray for funds. And John said, that's hard work. And praying is hard work, right? He's right. Fervent, concentrated, effective prayer is hard work. This doesn't become easy. So we do need prayer warriors. And I think that's one of the reasons that a number of the ministries and give out various newsletters. We've given you different examples of that. If you're interested in getting the newsletters from the particular ministries in your state, then perhaps you could just sign the little paper that we have here, and then we'll send those addresses on to whoever we need to. Susan, why don't you just talk about that book for a second?
We put together, we had hoped that more penal coordinators would send us information. We did get a nice little blurb here from New Mexico. But we tried to put the penal coordinators from Alabama, Arizona, right in order here. So if you're from a particular state and you want to contact, this is the person that you would want to contact in your area. And it is such a resource, you don't want to pass that up. If you're thinking of getting involved in prison ministry and you want to do it locally, then at least call this person that's a penal coordinator for that area and find out about the institution, what's happening in that institution with correspondence courses. If the chaplain's receptive, mm-hmm. You know, pick their brains. Don't avoid getting all the information you can.
Yeah. And we'll have that book available on our larger display. So that's the first way of being involved in prison ministry, is by praying for those already doing the work.
And then the other is the financial part. Sometimes people will have relatives in jail or know a friend in jail, and it's too traumatic for them to be involved. But they'll contact us, and they'll ask us to become involved with that person. We've been able to do that on a number of occasions, but what they'll do is maybe send money, and to make the ministries go, I think that's one of the hardest things that prison ministries struggle with. A lot of people don't care about prisoners, just lock them up and don't give them anything when they've already taken so much from society. So I know that even in John and Marianne's case, one of the reasons John has now gone to work as a full-time chaplain is to supplement the ministry. You know, I mean, not only have they got a humongous ministry down there, and not only are they overworked, but now John is also working to support it. And I know Gaylord and Barbara Kramer are here from Indiana, and they desperately need office workers. And Gaylord is still working full-time. And that's how it was for us for a long time. So we really see that. I think we struggle less. We struggle with it, but we struggle less than some of the U.S. offices because they are huge. We have such a small population in comparison to the U.S. and a smaller prison population. So our financial burden is not as great as the U.S. offices, so if you have a state office that you'd like to send some money to, they'd be most appreciative.
Our total inmate population in Canada is approximately 34,000, and that's the same population as inmate population that you have just in the state of Michigan. So therefore, the proportions are totally different. Okay, other areas of possible involvement. If you're already giving, if you're already praying, then there certainly are a number of practical ways, and I think that's what a lot of you are here. We're going to go through some of these and are here for. And so we're going to go through some of these. One fairly easy way to be involved is by providing chapel services. This can be done on a weekly basis. It can be done on a monthly basis. Whatever the chaplain happens to need. You simply contact the chaplain of your local institution and say, do you need any volunteers to help with chapel services? And he may say, boy, do I ever. Generally speaking, they will say that. That could be a couple, husband and wife, for example. It could be two or three men. It could be a group, six or seven of you, mixed, male and female. If just a couple of you go in, well, I'll just talk in general terms. As far as the chapel service is concerned, you would lead the men in singing. There would be hymn books provided or song sheets or whatever. You need a musician. One of you should be a musician, either a pianist or an organist or perhaps even just a guitar.
More the merrier. They love the music.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. So you lead them in 10, 15 minutes of singing. And they usually love to sing. And enough have some kind of a background, although they may have not heard the gospel. They seem to remember the old hymns like Amazing Grace. That's really their favorite one.
Many have been to Sunday school.
Yeah.
And gotten away from that, but when they come in their time of need, then they start to evaluate, and they most appreciate the hymns and the connection.
Yeah, and again, keep in mind that they're coming to a chapel service voluntarily, so they want to be there. So, okay, a little bit of time singing with them. Then if you have somebody talented, a little bit of special music, a solo or a duet or whatever, or even an instrument of some sort. Then some sort of message. It can be speaking, or it could be a video, which is what we do sometimes,
Or it could be something very special. The Ezekiel Project involves... How many of you have heard of the Ezekiel Project? Okay, so then you know that's open-air evangelism type things. And one of the things they do is they use the sketchboard, right? And so we've had a guy from the Ezekiel Project come in and present some evangelism via sketchboarding. Just a tremendous, fascinating tool because the guys are just glued right to it. And so 20, 25 minutes of that. Or we'll have a Christian ventriloquist come in or a Christian gospel magician. And the guys just love this type of thing. I mean, not only is it entertaining, but they also get a good, clear presentation. I mean, to have a dummy tell them the gospel or tell them that they're bad guys. I mean, they'll take it from a dummy, right? And it's just the fellow that we have, Max, he's here with us at the conference, and he's just an incredible, one of the best ventriloquists that I've ever seen. So use your imagination. Be creative as far as the presentation is concerned. In the last group, someone said, what do you present during that time? Well, we've learned over the course of the years, and mainly through a pastoral chaplain, he simply said, Garrett, he said, you don't need to preach the gospel every week. He said, sometimes these guys or in different institutions, they just are pounded with the gospel every week, and they're told that they're terrible, terrible sinners every week, and that they're going to go to hell. He said, that's really discouraging for some of these guys. He said, build them up. Do some teaching. Do some practical stuff with them. And then include the gospel. You know, don't leave the gospel out totally, but give 20 minutes of practical Christian teaching or exposition or something that's pertinent to their level, and then also include the gospel. Okay, so chapel services.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Just on that other thing, too, is what this pastoral coordinator told us was that they need practical Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for instance, a lot of these people lie. They don't know that it's wrong to lie. That their world is so different. And so you need to start on the basics. You could just have, you know, what is a lie?
Yeah.
And how does God feel about that? And teach it. So you have your practical things that's going to make a difference in their lives that they can relate to. Another one is pen pal. You can write to prisoners. I would only do that through an organization. I would not do it from your home. You never use your home address. Don't use your last name under most circumstances. In our cases, we found out that our counselors were busy enough corresponding with their particular students. So when we get a request for a pen pal, we at first tried to work with that, but we found that the people in the churches that would want to write, you had to spend so much time with them to tell them what not to write that it just wasn't worth it. So Prison Fellowship has a ministry that way, so we just send the guy the address for Prison Fellowship. We just say, you know, if you don't want to do the courses and you just want a pen pal, then, you know, this is who you need to write to. But if you wanted to check with your state field mm-hmm. coordinator, if that was your thing, you love writing letters,
yeah.
then just check with them and how they would recommend it.
Yeah. Marking and counseling correspondence courses.
Now, when we refer to the penal coordinators in the U.S., there are 32 different offices covering all of the states. It was started, as I said, from a Bible school student, which I said is Phil Wagner, but he was a Bible school student going to Emmaus and just doing his practical Christian ministry at Cook County Jail. Got the vision for the possibilities of using correspondence courses, which he did, starting there, and then moved to Southern California where they were covering the United States with correspondence courses. And Phil thought, this is nuts, being the pioneer visionary that he is, and he started traveling around to different assemblies promoting the work and explaining how people could become involved, and with the goal of having a penal coordinator for every state. What this works into is, for instance, still within Texas, Ralph Nichols was exercised to take on the work in his retirement years, and it went from something like 50 or 60 students at just a few institutions to now over 200 institutions involved, and I think 20-odd churches assemblies involved. And what they do is Ralph gives a particular assembly a certain institution. And so then they take a real interest in that institution, and they do all the work, but they send in their statistics to Ralph, and just does a tremendous work when you can have a penal coordinator. And there are states still waiting for penal coordinators. Don and Mary Ann Bell, I think, are covering 5 states. They took on the state of Michigan a number of years ago. Phil had been doing it, and the work had built up to a certain level, and then someone else took it over in Michigan, and it died down. How a work dies down is sometimes our fault, not necessarily lack of interest. And one thing we can't emphasize enough is if you're going to do something, do it well, do it consistently, do it dependably. That's how you get a credibility with the chaplains. If they can count on you, then if you want to do something else, they're free to let you do that. If in our case, if we want to expand to another institution, we have a credibility that they will allow our volunteers to go into another institution. I cannot say how thankful we are for so many reliable volunteers that have been able to multiply the work because of them. And so in the state of Michigan, the person that was involved did not consistently send out courses. He just let the work die, and that was a real discouragement. So John and Mary Ann then picked up the state of Michigan. If there was anyone here that, I don't think there's anyone from Michigan. Yeah, Michigan, huh? If there's anyone here that wanted to take over the work of Michigan, they would be glad to set them up and train them and do this kind of thing. But you can become involved in the correspondence work in any particular state that you're interested in. And if you don't want to be involved in the work of the correspondence courses, that's fine. But at least pick the brains of the penal coordinators to the area that you're interested in.
How does the work work, and how does the correspondence course actually work?
How it works is the first course is a Born to Win, and it was written by Steve Thompson. Thank you. Steve Thompson was a man that was in the Navy. He committed a crime in Japan, went to jail in Japan, and a Christian missionary reached out to him, and he became a Christian. He gives his testimony in the first part of this book, which is really interesting. He then came back, went to one of the assemblies in Chicago, and started working at Cook County Jail, has a tremendous ministry there as a chaplain, just a super guy. And he wrote this book, which is written specifically for prisoners, and so it's written in a language that they can relate to, and it's 12 gospel stories, starting with the lost sheep, the good Samaritan, a little man who was up a tree, two preachers who went to jail, so sort of in a language they can enjoy. You have to use postage paid enrollment cards. In that, if we send a course to a guy and his cellmate wants to become involved in the courses, and he can send in this postage-paid envelope, postage-paid
enrollment
card. Excuse me, I have a cold. And that way, he can get involved. We send in a little tract. Each course that's completed gets a certificate. EMAS provides these. We have our own because we use EMAS Everyday Publications. Navigator courses and Mailbox Bible Club, real simple courses. Every 5 courses they complete, they get a larger certificate with an award book. Our first award book is Twice Pardoned. We got that here. The story of Harold Morris, who was doing 2 life sentences for crimes he didn't commit, but he said if you play with dogs, you get dirty, and he was in the wrong place at the wrong time doing the wrong thing, but he didn't happen to do the crimes he was convicted of, and he became a Christian. It's an excellent story for the men, and if a guy wins, this is an award book, and if he's the only one on his unit, quite often this book will get passed around to every guy in the unit. It works for a great tract for us. Then they send their courses in and in postage-paid enrollment card envelope, and this provides them, they don't have to use their stamps for it, but also we cannot send in envelopes with stamps on. I don't know about the U.S. system. In Canada, they cut them off because they can have drugs underneath a stamp. So we have to provide that service. Our majority of costs go into the envelopes and the enrollment cards and buying the courses. And we have an introductory letter welcoming them, explaining how the program works.
As we get a new exam back from a student from one of the Born to Wins, we assign, we're small enough, our organization is small enough, that we can assign that student to a particular counselor. And so then that counselor will follow that student all the way through. And they develop really close relationships via these courses. And they will write letters back and forth because they'll ask certain questions. And it's just very interesting. We'll have somebody come into our office, and Kay will come in, for example. She said, well, listen, is there a course from Steve yet? And she will be eagerly waiting for a course from Steve because she will have been praying for Steve. So that's really kind of neat. Then they also work back and forth with letters. And I'm going to read some of that right now. First of all, at the end of every EMAIS exam, the exam itself is multiple choice, and so they mark those off. That's computer marked. There are computer programs to do that. But at the end of every exam, there's also a little question that says, what do you say? And then it has a question, and then there are a couple of lines. Some of you may have seen some of the EMAIS courses already, and so therefore there's a direct student response. They have to actually write something, and that's where our counselors get involved. The course has already been marked, but then the counselor responds to these little remarks. For example, the question was, are you a new creation in Christ? How do you know whether you are or not? And then the student answered, and this is copied right from one of the courses, I want Christ to lead my life. Since I have accepted Christ as my Savior, I have noticed changes in my behavior.
I don't swear anymore, and I want to be nice to people. I even have the urge to quit smoking. It is hard to give your life over 100% to the Lord when we're so used to running our own lives. Now, that's pretty practical stuff, right? I mean, we're struggling with that yet ourselves, aren't we? That's Krishna's on the street. But each day I pray for Jesus to guide and strengthen me and take away my worries and fears. These Bible courses help very much, and I'm thankful to God for them. Thank you also for your time and encouraging notes and letters. Then another one. This one is written by Joseph to his counselor, Colleen. Wow. Hi, Colleen. I just feel really excited after I finished the lesson on assurance of salvation. I always thank God for this new life. I know I am free, and God has a home for me in heaven. God has really helped me to memorize these verses. You know, before coming to jail, I could not even memorize my own telephone number. And even to go to the corner store to pick up a few things, I would forget what I went for. Now, I can memorize 42 words with God's help. Praise the Lord. Remember that some of their educational level is not very high, so he is learning even now to memorize. I really enjoyed doing this lesson on assurance, and I can't wait for the next course. Here's another letter. We get all types of letters. This one's to Myrna. Dear Myrna, I am at the present time taking a Bible course through your office. I am writing to ask if you would try and find me a Christian lady who would be interested in corresponding with me by mail here at the institution, preferably between the ages of 28 and 48. I'm a very loving and caring 38-year-old individual who has been directed by the Lord to find a Christian lady for a relationship and possible marriage. Would you please ask her to send a photograph? I cannot, because I have no access to my personal belongings while here, and that part is true. I will be here until July 21st. Thank you, Myrna, and may the good Lord help you with your search for my lady. So we get all kinds of requests, right?
Of course, you didn't hear that one.
Yes, we did.
Actually, you be very positive. And yeah. He said he's on the right track. He does need a Christian lady now. However, our counselors were all busy, and we just really couldn't provide this service. But
yeah. Now, if you get involved in the pen pal thing, or even in this aspect of the correspondence courses, and if you're a lady, it's very possible that you'll get a proposal. We had one of our counselors get a proposal from a guy, and that was tough. I mean, it's tough from both sides. There are certain guidelines, if you are ladies, as to how to work. Generally, we we'll cover some of this later on, but generally we say that if you're doing one-on-one, it's men with men and women with women, for obvious reasons. We have one page in our manual that talks just exactly the message to lady volunteers, and it's very, very specific. I mean, even as to what you wear or how you dress, it's very meaningful to the guy. So there are certain guidelines. The easiest way, if you're a pen pal, and if your name is Joan, you simply change and get yourself a pen name and call yourself John. All right, and then you'll have no troubles like that at all, for example, because they're simply writing to John then, or Ben, or whatever, instead of to Sue. Because otherwise, they'll start romanticizing. Okay, other ways of being involved. Video showings. We started, like I say, in 1980 with films, Christian films, but now we're using videos. Videos are obviously cheaper to purchase. A good Christian film is $1,500, whereas a video is $25 or $30. We have a good number of the videos already worked out, and there's a list of them here if you're interested. A whole lot of the videos that we use with their length of time and a very brief one-line description right here, and then a few paragraph descriptions. For every 10 videos or 10 films that we preview, we can use one or two. That's the proportion. So we're always previewing more stuff because we want to keep current. The first one I'm going to show you here was actually a very new film when we started in 1980. That's free. Is a story of five or six guys doing some really heavy-duty time at San Quentin, which is one of the toughest prisons in California. These guys have become Christians, and it's very powerful to see them walking around the institution with their Bibles under their hands, sharing their testimony with other inmates. And then you see these same guys pumping 200 pounds or 250 pounds iron in the yard, and so it's very effective because then these guys think, oh, man, there must be something to this Christianity after all. It's not just for sissies, or it's not just a crutch. But as I said, that film was originally made in 1978. We started in 1980, so it was a new film then. But now it's getting a little bit older, right? So we're always previewing more materials to find different titles. And if you have any examples for us, 40, 45 minutes, 50 minutes, good stories, true testimonies, we need to hear from you what's out there. So
you might mention, we're set free.
Right.
We sometimes prepare the guys and say, it's an older film, it's got a good message. Let us know what you think afterwards if we should keep it in the curriculum.
Yeah.
And so you respect them by saying it's an old film. And you let them have their input, but we have never had a guy who has ever said take it out.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
But you just you know, address it.
So we use films with testimonies, direct inmate involvement, or we use general purpose films such as this one, The Paradise Trail. It's a good old-fashioned Western, but the gospel is clearly being presented in it many times. So it's a favorite of theirs, actually, also. So the list, then, that we have presented over there includes testimonies of guys or situations of men in jail, like the Set Free, or general-purpose-type films.
If you take videos in and you go to your gospel bookstore, you read the blip on the back side, which always sounds wonderful, never take a video in to an institution without previewing
yeah.
it. And sometimes there can be just one or two lines. Like we had one that was really good, and yet it made some derogatory remark about a particular faith. And unless we can cut that out, we can't use that. It violates our interfaith policy in Ontario, and we can lose a whole program, a whole institution, by having something like that. So you need to know your institution, and you need to view those videos first.
Yeah. So how do you actually do it? Again, check with your chaplain, and if he wants that type of program, two or three or six or seven of you, simply go in, and you may get four or five guys, you may get 55 guys, you may get 150 guys, depending on the institution. You would show then your video or your film, and then open it up for discussion. Sometimes nothing is said. They just don't want to talk because something has been going on in the institution. Other times, man, you can't quit them, and they just keep on talking or discussing, and that's when it's a good time to offer the Bible correspondence course. You say, listen, if anybody's here interested in learning more about what we've been talking about, here's the correspondence course that you could work on. So the situations are different. Like I said, two guys can do it, can go in, or a larger group. If you have a larger group, it's really kind of neat because then afterwards, you can pair off one volunteer with four or five guys or whatever and just discuss the film. So there are different ways of doing it. But a couple, a married couple, for example, could do it. So it can be as small as one or two people going in or as large as 10 or 12.
Another thing with the video, go ahead.
The Jesus film would be very appropriate, except that it's long. It's 2 hours long.
So we have it available
yeah.
for chaplains who want it at certain times of the year. They know they can ask for it, but we can't use it in our regular programming because
mm-hmm.
it's too long, but it's excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, it would, especially the Jesus film would especially be good at Easter time, for example.
Yeah.
Now, optimum depends on the program, but most chapel programs or video evenings are 45 minutes to an hour, hour and a half. Depends on what the chaplain has. Sometimes if you may have to go into an institution and do two or three film showings or video showings on that same night because they don't mix security levels. For example, they have a group of maximum security guys and a group of minimum security guys
in
one institution, but they can't mix them in the chapel. So you might have to show that same video twice then, and so therefore you'd have to keep it a little bit shorter. So a two-hour video in that case would be way too long. On the other hand, if they're all medium security guys and the chaplain says, sure, you can come on in for 3 hours, then you could use a larger one like that. And bring in coffee and cookies. That sometimes works too. Sometimes the chaplain will supply coffee. In fact, for our chapel services, it's a great way to get some of the other sisters from the assemblies involved because he allows us to bring in baked goods, and the guys love that. And so then we say, if anybody wants to contribute cookies or whatever, baked goods, we bring them in and have a time of talking and chatting with the guys after a video showing or after a chapel service. And again, it's a really good interaction one-on-one at that particular time.
I hope you're picking up that what it is, if be creative.
Yeah.
If the Lord puts, if you have a particular interest or a skill or someone else does like this, you know, whether it's a mime or a magic or singing or, you know, preaching, use it. Like one of the things you might be interested in is that we have recently shown the Florence Littower videos at the women's prison, an hour and a half from us. We went in for 8 Monday mornings and showed this consistently. And one of the ladies, an older lady in our chapel, said to us, well, why would you take that in? It's not really heavy on the gospel. And my friend and I had to laugh because one of the girls had just said the week before, she said, these are so religious. This lady's talking about God all the time, you know. And actually, they do have the gospel in there a couple of times. So it depends on your perspective. For someone that's been raised in a church and watches Florence Littower, you know, it's a bunch of fluff and, you know, it's okay. But we found the concepts of the women sort of understanding their personalities and how to relate when they're living in groups together. The superintendent of the jail was thrilled we were bringing it in, and it really did help women to understand themselves and the jerk next to them they couldn't get along with. Oh, well, they just found out that was their personality. They were normal. You know, it's okay. So we had a wonderful time, and that's something you might want to consider in the women's prison. Personality Tree with Florence Littower. I can talk to you more about that after if you like.
Hey, another way?
Variety, lots of variety. Depending on your your situation. You may want to get involved with an organization that provides different kinds of things, like you can help it with the families. What we found is when we get involved with, a Christian inmate that we get to know, we may get to know his family. And families do time.
Yeah.
Families, I think, personally, suffer more than the guy inside. I say guys because 95% of the people inside are guys. And I have seen the poor women, you know, they go from a husband that's working full-time to mother's allowance or welfare. They have no support, and then the fellow's calling collect all the time. I mean, well, they're already on a minimum amount of income. Then they've got these huge phone bills, and the guy is the victim inside. He's the one being treated so badly. He's got all his meals prepared. He's got his place. The woman is out there caring for the kids that are going through trauma because their father's in prison. It's horrendous. So if you can do anything to help families, but you have to be wise, we have a book here that called Games Criminals Play. It can be a setup. So you have to be wise. You have to be cautious. That's the word we want to leave with you. Be cautious, be wise, but go ahead and be involved as long as you do that. Transportation. We have a lovely couple in Kingston right now, which is where we have 8 prisons, an assembly couple that are full-time. And one of the things they've done is women that drive up to Kingston to see their people inside, they have opened their home on weekends for women to stay there, which is a tremendous support group. So if you don't want to be directly involved with prison ministry, maybe with the families, then babysitting the children who cannot be, who are not able to go into the prisons. So that's the babysitting, providing overnight lodging, helping financially. Maybe you want to pay for a little bit of gas or some groceries. Being a big brother, big sister to the children that are involved. So there's just all kinds of opportunities. But preferably work through a ministry, work with a ministry so that you don't get taken in a lot of these cases.
Another way, obviously, is one-on-one visitation. You simply go in after a video showing or after a chapel service or ask the chaplain, do you know anybody that has never had a visit? We had one guy that had never had a visit for 7 years. And so chaplains are often looking for men or women to come and do one-on-one visitation. Once again, generally speaking, it should be women with women for one-on-one and men with men. But if you're close to a women's prison, then that's ideal. Because they need someone to come and talk with them. And I'll talk more about all of that in detail as to one-on-one visitation. The nitty-gritty of that. Susan, this last one? My overhead's falling apart. Sorry about that.
We had a neat situation. Be creative. We have a woman chaplain that is so totally overworked that I had said to her, would you like to have a Christian volunteer come in and work with you and supplement your hours in programs and things? And she said that she would be open to that. We've done that before, coordinated things. And it's a wonderful way to enhance that Christian ministry and to relate to the women inside and this kind of thing. So there's lots of possibilities here. I wonder...
I'll go over quickly. Yeah. What Susan was just mentioning was that some of what I'm going to cover now is actually in this little brochure. All right, so I'm going to go over it very quickly because some are very basic, and it may also tweak a question that you had. What are inmates like then generally? First of all, the average inmate today is under 25 years of age. 96% are men, and obviously 3 or 4% are women. Many come from broken homes or from a home where there was little love or discipline. However, some come from good homes, and as we said, some come from good, solid Christian homes. They are accustomed to doing whatever they wanted to do. Many have had an average of 9 years of education, but only acquired an actual seventh grade education, so they failed a couple of years here or there. On the other hand, some have a university education. The offender may be a first-time offender or a multiple offender, may have committed a minor or a major offense. Perhaps the most important thing to remember is that he could be anyone at all. The offender is not a problem person, but a person with problems. Everyone has problems, and everyone is capable of committing an offense. The average offender is a very ordinary Joe who hasn't been particularly successful at anything, even at being a criminal, or clearly he wouldn't be in one of our institutions. Continuing on that same vein. Number 7, in jail, the inmate is realizing the impact of loneliness. Perhaps for the first time, he's been separated from his family and his friends. He may have an occasional controlled visit from a relative or a friend, but it's never very natural. When I say controlled visit, it may well be between a glass partition. He on one side, you or his friend or relative on the other side, and talking through a telephone.
or through a little mesh at the bottom, and that's really tough. Number 8, he may have very few acceptable interpersonal relationships. In prison, he tends to seek out his own kind. In an unnatural, single-sex environment like prison, homosexual invitations, pressures, and practices definitely do occur. Just a fact of life in prison. He feels he's a victim of injustice. He finds it very hard to face the fact that he's personally responsible for his own imprisonment. If he did have some religious training in his childhood, he now feels that God has let him down. He may doubt his own security as a believer, and he's not at all sure that God will hear and answer his prayers. On the other hand, he may thank God for stopping him in his tracks, as we mentioned earlier already. If he's never had any Christian training, he will assume that God and church are for others and not for him. He does not understand the good news of the gospel, and please also remember that he will not understand any of our common Christian language, Christianese, as I have written here. The word atonement or propitiation, I mean, these are tough words. We just can't start using those words there. We have to start with very basic language in most cases. Finding it very difficult to accept responsibility for his acts and their consequences, he soon falls into the prison games that inmates play in an effort to beat the system of justice that has deprived him of his liberty. What does an inmate really need? Again, this is much of this is in those little brochures that you have. He needs Christian friends who can show genuine concern for him without leaving the impression of being better than you. This friend may be a chaplain, another inmate, a correctional officer, or a friend on the street. We're all on the street, right? They're either in jail or on the street. That's just another bit of terminology there. He needs a friend who can listen more than talk, and who through wise and loving questioning can lead him to explore some alternatives to his problems. He needs to establish worthwhile relationships with you and others based on mutual trust, respect, honesty, and understanding. If he's a Christian, he may need reassurance of the security of the believer, the personal value that he has as a child of God, and the knowledge that even though he has sinned, he has in Jesus Christ an advocate with the Father. The non-Christian inmate needs to know that God loves him, that the Lord Jesus died for him, and that God wants him to be a member of his family. But he also needs to know that you love him as a person, and the opportunity to share your faith may not come in the first moments of conversation. One time I was visiting with a guy, and he was angry, and just for a whole hour, he just spit out all of his anger. And that was fine. I was neutral. I wasn't an inmate, nor was I a correctional officer. And for that whole time of visiting with him, he just unloaded. But that was okay, because in the meantime, I was building bridge. Next week when I was in to see him, he started off again a little bit, thanked me for just being a listener, and then I was able to share with him, because I'd earned the right then to talk, because I'd listened to him, first of all. So you need to be a good listener. Only the Holy Spirit can convict of sin and convert the soul. You will need to be led by the Holy Spirit. He needs to know that he can trust you to care for him, and that you will not fall for the games he may try to play with or on you, but that you will continue to love him in spite of them, even as God loves us. Two more of these overheads, some really practical stuff here. Okay, before starting visiting prisoners, it's important that you first of all know for sure that the Lord has called you to this type of ministry. It's not a ministry for everyone. It's certainly not for novices. Certainly not for glory seekers. It would be also very helpful to have your assembly or a ministry group behind you for prayer and support, that others know of your interest and involvement. Take any volunteer training that is available, either through the institution or through your sponsoring ministry. Get to know the regulations of the local institutions. For example, times of visitation, when can you come in? Times for the count. That means every day they do a count of how many inmates are actually there, three or four times. So you need to know that. Time for the drug up, refreshments time. Get to know the chaplain or the volunteer coordinator. Very essential. Have a realistic view of your time involvement. Prison ministry can become a bottomless pit, and if you're not careful, you can just keep right on going, giving everything you've got. If at all possible, work within a group or with a partner. This will allow for sharing, praying, and counseling together, and also will help avoid the martyr syndrome. You know, I'm the only one going in. I've done this for 3 years, and it's storming out, and yet I'm going in. So it's really great to be able to do it with somebody else. Okay, the actual nitty-gritty then of one-on-one. Just a few comments here. Visit your new friend regularly and consistently. I think Susan mentioned that already. We need to be consistent. Whether it be once a week, twice a month, or even once per month, your person will be counting on you, and generally speaking, he has been let down too many times already. You must cancel, let him know through the proper channels, and rearrange or reschedule another time with him. Obey all the rules. Don't smuggle anything in or out. If it's a course, you can't take a course out. One time an inmate gave me a Bible correspondence. He said, let me give this to you, Ray, so we don't have to wait for the mail. And that was fine, but I simply said, I'll give it to the officer first. And the officer was standing right there, so I gave it to the officer. He flipped through it, and he said, here, you can take it. Another time, an officer read the whole thing. Now, that's up to them, whatever they want. But the inmate knows that it's going to be checked out, so therefore there's no smuggling back and forth. A lot of this, again, is covered in the particular book, Games, Criminals, Play. Don't get involved in the inmate's legal matters. Leave that to the lawyer. Don't get involved in his financial matters. Remember, at first, most prisoners see you as only someone to run errands for them. Your mission is to offer friendship and to talk with him about moral and spiritual matters. If you're a woman and are visiting a male inmate, which, as we said already, which is really not a good idea unless he perceives you as his great-grandmother, he may even see every kind word as an indication that you have romantic interest in him. Remember, he's locked up in a very unnatural situation for a long, long time. Respect the inmate's right to confidentiality. This involves not mentioning names of situations to others. And our exceptions to this would include learning of attempted suicide or hostage taking or escapes. That you do need to report, either to a chaplain or to an officer. They need to know about that. Everything else is confidential. And you don't go and talk to people at the assembly about what you've just been doing. That needs to stay confidential also. And then lastly, don't be curious as to what crime has been committed. Sometimes it's better for you not to know. Sometimes I just assume not know, because then I can talk to that person as a person. Because sometimes the crimes that they commit are very horrendous. And it's easier simply to talk to them, to listen to them, to share with them if we don't know. Sometimes they'll tell you, and that's okay. You just, matter of fact, and on you go. So those are just a few of the nitty-gritty things then. And the last one then, extra resources. Some of these pamphlets which we've handed out to you already. The book, Twice Pardoned. If you're seriously, I think we have probably enough for everybody here. So take one of these. Take one of these if you've not already read it. It's an excellent book because it'll give you a good idea of what prison life is like in America. If you, those we can give away. If you want one of these books, we have to sell those for, let's say, $6. But also we'll give you some really good insights, too. But that's probably the best one. So that's the book, The Games Criminals Play. We have the addresses right here. If you are going to get involved, take one of these and write for one of these books. Just an absolute must. Addresses of the Mayo's coordinators we've already talked about, and we'll have that available for at our other table, and then samples of manuals that we have developed for visitation, for correspondence work. Again, no use reinventing the wheel. We are happy to share all of that with you.